Welcome to the Sober Buddy podcast, your boost of sober thinking and awesome life building. I'm Tara Zoe, CEO and co-founder here at Sober Buddy, and I am joined today by RJ Zimmerman, host of the Untapped Keg podcast, mental health and sobriety advocate, and aspiring cook. We're going to talk about that. I am excited to get into RJ's story and his recovery and all that he's been up to. But first, remember, if you like what you hear on the podcast, you should subscribe to the Sober Buddy app because we're the people who created it. Do some challenges, get some motivation, share screenshots of your sober tracker, and tell Buddy how you're feeling today. Welcome to the show, RJ.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited. No, I was on your podcast. This is how we met.
That is.
And it was great. It was such a great episode. I loved that whole episode that we did together.
It was one of those episodes where you're recording it and you're like, this one is a lot of fun. I hope that it came out as well, as you know, as fun and as informative as it felt like recording. And it was one of those that came out even better what it sounded like. That's what I thought, at least.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, when you have like a really good conversation with a friend, like over coffee or something, I felt that way when I got off the podcast. I was like, that was a good conversation. It was really good. So yeah. Everyone has to check out the Sober Buddy with my interview on RJ's podcast. And again, it's Untapped Keg. We'll put some links down in the show notes. But I'm excited to hear more about your story because we talked about my story. We talked about Sober Buddy a lot. And now we can talk about you.
Oh, my favorite subject.
I know. We all, it's just fabulous. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. We got to talk about you. We've talked a little bit about you being like getting into cooking with Blue Apron, but we'll swing around to that. But I would love to start with just kind of, because we want to talk about your sobriety and recovery, talk to me about, let's start with, what's your drug of choice?
So I'm an alcoholic. And I've been sober for 8.5 years.
Okay. And tell me about kind of when you started getting into drinking and kind of where that went from there.
So I was such like a goody two shoes almost. I really wasn't, but like I was so scared of drinking and alcohol and everything. I didn't start drinking until I was 18. I had sips before then, but 18, first time I got drunk was after homecoming. And then because I didn't want to get caught and miss sports, I didn't drink again until I graduated. But I still remember like that first time that I got drunk and that feeling that I had of like everybody looking at me a little bit different, being accepted more. But really it was my inner critic kind of shut off and like my mind really went like it. I don't want to say it flatlined, but it like all of a sudden it was it wasn't as loud as what it was in my mind.
And then just to kind of put it into a frame of reference, were you like an overthinker, overachiever kind?
Yeah, I was. And I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't know that that's how I was kind of wired until like later in college and looking back at how I was in high school and things. It's like, yeah, I was hypercritical of myself. I always strove to be perfect in the things that I cared about. So all of a sudden, and I always wanted to be accepted by my peers too. Like that was really what drove me a lot. And I never felt, even though I had a lot of friends, and I have a lot of friends like from then still, I still didn't feel completely accepted. I felt tolerated more than accepted. But when I got drunk, I felt accepted. And that was kind of what I kept trying to find, was that acceptance.
Okay. Okay. So you waited until you waited a while to drink again. And then when did it start to become kind of like a thing you were doing where it, you know, kind of took you into the next level of drinking?
Yeah, that was college. And you know, that freshman year, just being out by myself, trying to find kind of my balance of what I wanted, how I wanted to be, you know, a partier. And the thing is, you know, 3 years ago about I was diagnosed with ADHD, but school came really easily to me. Like if I went to class and I could write things down, I could retain it a little bit. So that first like semester up until the Thanksgiving break, I can remember it. I'd go out on the weekends and every time I drink, I get blacked out, but that's what everybody's doing. So it's not a problem at this point. And I would do good well in school. Well, I was doing so well and I didn't feel like it was difficult. So I stopped going to class after Thanksgiving and like everything kind of went down.
Right.
So I went through these waves of partying and drinking and making really bad choices. And then going to class and getting good grades so I wouldn't get kicked out. And then partying and drinking and making really bad choices. And then going to right. class. So you can look at my transcripts and you could tell like, oh, you actually showed up to class. Like it wasn't mm-hmm. even that I took it serious. It was you showed up to class kind of a
thing. Right, right.
So, and then like I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So I felt lost, like probably 22-ish, okay. right around 22. And a lot of my friends are graduating and they have plans. And I didn't even plan when I was going to college. I asked my best friend where he's going. He told me, I'm like, all right, I'm applying today. And so that's how I picked where I was going to school.
So you were super social.
Yeah. 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 And that was my backpack. It fell
over. Just for anybody referencing, if you're on YouTube, his backpack just fell down in the background.
Right in the screen. Moved. It was out of screen and then it came in screen. So, but I didn't have a plan at all. And anybody who talked to me like, what do you plan on doing? You know, at first I was a psych major. So what do you plan on doing with psychology? I don't know. Like, you know, maybe like being a profiler would be fun, working for the police or something. Like, and you could tell like I didn't take it serious. And so people didn't take me serious, but I was still accepted, especially out at parties. People would text, hey, where's RJ? You know, when's he going to get here? But I would wake up.
It was working, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely was. And I get, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and I wouldn't know where I am. Mm. I don't know how I got there, you know, 4 hours of the night. Well, it's more than that, but like 4 hour gap at the bars and I would have no money. I have like, you know, $100 that I'd need to eat on and pay some bills. And I would end up spending, you know, 50 of it one night and then the other 50 the next night. And then I'd just try to get friends to buy me drinks the third night. Mm. And it's like, what am I doing? Mm. But I didn't stop. Even though I knew I did not like myself and all everything, like being accepted, especially out at the bars and stuff, like that was the feeling that I needed. Like that was when I started to use it as an escape.
Right. Right.
So it got to the point where I changed cities. Still don't know what I want to do with this point, but I moved, you know, about 3 hours away and just starting over. And
so this was like when you moved cities, it was because you were trying to get away from this scene or just, you just moved it. And then that caused that.
It was, I can't stop myself from going to certain bars and hanging out with certain people that would influence me in the wrong direction. I was starting to try to moderate myself, but I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so I just needed to get away from the city for a fresh start. I needed a new environment.
So where were you and where'd you go?
So I was in Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I moved to Madison, Wisconsin.
Now I can hear a little bit of the Wisconsin thing. When you say Wisconsin, I can hear that accent.
Yeah. That's about when it comes out as like Wisconsin, when I say like food or things like that. It comes and goes a little bit.
So what was the point? So you moved cities and did that fix it or did it continue on?
I didn't drink as much.
Okay.
But every time I did, I tried to drink all of it and I kept drinking until I blacked out, waking up in places that I don't know where I am again. You know, still making bad decisions such as driving drunk or, going home with people that I don't know, you know, and it's a new city. I don't know my way around. And that was kind of when I realized, okay, this is more than just like, I'm in an environment where I feel like I have to party. Mm-hmm. This is becoming it has a pull on me that I can't stop.
So that's an interesting like turn of where you're saying that like the alcohol and the partying is the problem, you know, or the environment's the problem. And then when you changed environments and it was still an issue, you have to kind of come to the, wait a second, this might be me. This might be, you know, an issue that I'm having.
Yeah. And looking at my friends, so anybody who doesn't know, like Wisconsin, it's straight alcohol all the time.
Right.
It's legal for your parents to give kids drinks at any age as long as they're there.
Wait, what?
Yes, it is legal in Wisconsin to give your kids a drink as long as you are there.
Now, do people do this a lot?
Yeah.
This is interesting.
I got drunk at the bar at 18 with my parents there and their coworkers buying me drinks to get me drunk because look at little RJ getting drunk. And that nobody batted an eye. Like, you know, everybody knew me. They knew I had just graduated high school, but my parents are there. So it's good. They're saying okay to it.
Right.
So like looking at my friends and how they've gone from this party kind of atmosphere and attitude, mm-hmm. they're able to moderate. And then looking at myself, well, I should be able to do that. And then not being able to, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, it's reinforcing this, like this internalized hatred of myself that mm-hmm. it goes back years, but I don't realize it yet at this point.
Right.
And so I decide I need to do something different. You know, I need to find my direction. So I'm going to go to line school and become a high voltage lineman, high voltage electricity. I work on that.
Okay.
And so I go and I get drunk maybe two or three times. But in that year, the two or three times, I drank until I blacked out again.
Mm.
And that's when it's like, I need to change this. But that was like the beginning of it. I still didn't stop. I still tried. I tried to moderate.
Yeah.
And then one night I go home, like to my hometown, and I get drunk with my friends. And I end up leaving my friends and going with these people that I have no idea who they are.
Okay.
And I get just absolutely obliterated. And I wake up the next day. I'm supposed to be heading back to Madison, which is 3 hours away, and going to do something with my girlfriend. And I text her and I say, hey, I'm not going to make it. And she's like, I know. I figured that you weren't going to when you said you were going back there.
Mm.
I was like, I'm waking up every morning. I'm like, you know, who do I have to apologize this time? I'm looking in the mirror. I have no direction. I don't have a career. I don't have anything to show for anything. 26, 27 years old.
I was just going to ask Cal Dre at this point. Yeah. 26, 27.
And I'm like, it's time. If I want to have a family, I want to have a career. I want to have some meaning in my life. I have to give alcohol up.
Right. And how did that feel? Did that feel like it was like going to be a huge loss, or what was kind of going through your mind when you made that decision?
Yeah, I was scared. I was like, am I going to be boring? And the thing is too, so when I was like 6 or 7, my dad stopped drinking and he has never drinking since. But he doesn't call himself sober and he doesn't call himself an alcoholic. He just doesn't drink.
Mm.
So like I knew that alcohol growing up, that alcohol was going to be, was possibly going to be an issue for me.
Mm.
And so like that also being in the back of my mind kind of helped me realize that I might have a problem with alcohol. Mm. So that was something that was there. But I'm still scared. Like every time I go to a baseball game, a football game, I just go and play a softball with my friends. Like
mm-hmm.
alcohol's involved in a major way.
Mm.
So am I going to be able to do this? Like a lot of the best restaurants in Wisconsin are bars.
Mm.
Am I going to be able to go out and eat? Like, you know, how is that going to feel? And going forward, you know, am I going to have the same friends?
Right. And so how did that shake out for you? I mean, you're afraid you're not going to be interesting or fun anymore, afraid of everything. And then now, did you go into some kind of a program or did you just decide to quit and you're going to do it on your own?
Can we swear on this podcast or keep it family?
Okay. Here's the rule.
Okay.
You can swear, but you got to say, sorry, Paul.
Okay. So I got sober, and I like to say it like this. I got sober because I'm a stubborn asshole. I'm sorry, Paul. So I went to an AA meeting with my girlfriend, who then became my wife when she was in her undergrad for psychology. And I talked about it there that I was probably going to have to go sober, but right now is not the right time. And people were like, well, at least you're making that recognition already. But just being there, it just gave me, and maybe it was just that meeting, but it just wasn't going to be for me.
Right. So you kind of felt when you went there, it didn't fit.
Yeah.
Right.
So knowing that, like, I want to become a high voltage line tech, I want to work on high voltage electricity and start a career. That's going to be a 4-year apprenticeship, trying to start my family. I don't want to have extra homework. I don't want to have extra things to do. I just want to, you know, try to figure this out and try to keep it going. So it became, and I didn't kind of think about this till not too long ago, was this is where my ADHD really helped me, because in ADHD, you hyperfixate on things.
Yeah, you hyperfocus.
So I hyperfixated on not drinking, and that was it. So after a couple months and having friends that saw me spiral, and they didn't really sit me down and talk to me and tell me that they saw the drinking problems and things. But they were all in for me to quit drinking.
That's amazing.
So them, I went out with them to a Brewer game, and that's, you know, we went tailgating and everything. And one of my friends offered me a beer, and I said, no. He's like, come on, you can just have one. And I said, no, I can't. And he said, you're being dramatic. Why do you always do this? Ooh. And my friend got in between us. He said, no. And he's serious. If you're going to do that, you can leave. And like, that was it. Like that was either make or break for me. And like, that was the moment where it was
the acceptance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, that's such a cool, like, kind of wraparound moment where you had done it all for acceptance, and then you were able to stand up for yourself and not be accepted in a sense.
Yeah. And
then
that was, you know, that
cool
was
a cool friend.
He, you know, and I've told him before, I would not be sober right now if it wasn't for him. Mm. And he doesn't believe it, but it's true. Like, I might be a few years, but I wouldn't be 8.5 years sober. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, from that point, like, I've kind of had my, you know, cross addictions where I kind of went all into work, and then I went all into like being a father and other things. But I've taken my time and my steps to get to my better self. So like, you know, really trying to find who I am, what I like to do, what did I do just because it had drinking involved and I didn't really enjoy it.
Right.
That kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So now how long have you had your podcast?
About 2.5 years.
So you've had your podcast for 2.5 years. And when did you start kind of advocating for sobriety?
Around the time of the podcast.
Okay.
It's difficult in Wisconsin. Especially being in the work that I was, blue collar, you go out on storm and you're staying in a hotel. Everybody gets drunk after you just work 18, 20 hours. Then they go to sleep for 4 hours, wake up and do it all over again. So it's tough to navigate that space a little bit and advocate for sobriety. But when I first started going sober, I would listen to Chris Hardwick's podcast, The Nerdist. And he would interview celebrities, and it wouldn't be about sobriety, but every once in a while, he would have an episode where they'd talk about sobriety and him being sober. Mm. And stories about him going sober and things he did when he was drunk, and I just didn't feel alone. Mm. And I wanted to give people that feeling that you're not alone, that everything in life affects your sobriety, but your sobriety doesn't affect everything in life. And I just wanted to be there for people too. So
I love that. I love that. And so let's talk about your cooking, because,
okay.
Because I feel like we need to know about this. And when we were on your podcast, you kind of told this story about how you got into cooking through Blue Apron. So tell us about that.
So I always enjoyed kind of cooking, but I was always intimidated, like especially by recipes. How much do you buy? How do you cut things? Just the I think the normal stuff that people get intimidated by when it comes to cooking. And when my oldest son was born, I wanted to make it easy for his mom to really not have to worry about the house so much, that I could take care of that. I didn't want to have to leave her alone with the new baby and go to the grocery store and get stuff or go out and get anything. So I ordered Blue Apron because I heard really good things about it. And I cooked the first meal. I think it was supposed to take like 30 minutes. It took me an hour. But I tasted it and I was like, this is one of the best things I've ever had in my life. And
Awesome.
from that moment on, like it's taught me knife cuts. It's taught me like some simple tricks, like take the spaghetti water and use it in the sauce. Like never would have thought about it, right? Like my mom was putting butter in everything. There was no noodle sauce going back into or noodle water going in the sauce. So
That's so funny. You know what's funny is I'm a book learner. Like, I don't know how Blue Apron presents it, but I've learned like all my cooking skills through books, like these cookbooks that just show you all of the little things, except for I want to say, and everyone, this is just showing like when cooking shows first came out, like when they were first like a thing on TV. I remember Rachel Ray would like go on and she would smash her garlic. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. I learned that from Rachel Ray, but my stepdad taught me how to use it, to chop really well with a knife and things like that. So there was a ton of things like that. But it's so funny how we kind of get around to things.
Absolutely. And it's become a hobby of mine. Like it's taught me how to really get out of my comfort zone, like try things I never would have tried cooking. Fish is a big one. I didn't want to cook fish because I was scared I was going to undercook it. I was scared a lot of different things. And I've cooked not always scallops. Like I've done a lot of different things, Indian food, like vegetarian dishes.
Nice.
They've all turned out great.
Are
There's
you
only been
cooking
like,
tonight?
not tonight, I'm not going to, but I am carving out time this week to cook because it's my hobby and I haven't been
Yes.
able to do it for like a month and a half.
Yeah, because you just
So I'm very
moved. You have
excited.
all this stuff going on. Yeah, that's great. So what are you going to cook?
So my oldest son swears, he's only four. He swears that he likes salmon. And so he got my youngest, who's three, to say, I want salmon too. I really like salmon. So we're going to go to the store together. We're going to get some salmon. And I'm going to cook some salmon with some rice and some broccoli, just something super simple. And we're going to see if he actually likes salmon.
Yeah, that's a pretty robust fish for that young. That's my favorite fish.
And I know my youngest will like it. My youngest loves all kinds of food. Basically, anything that I eat, he likes.
Love it. Love it.
So, and that's great. But my oldest is kind of picky. So it's going to be interesting when he sees it cooked, how he's going to react. And yeah, he's silly. But I try to indulge it when he says he wants to try something. I try to make sure that he gets to try it.
Well, I love that cooking has come out of this. And do you feel like just this is something that you would have gotten into if you hadn't gotten sober?
No. Like I grilled a little bit. But I wouldn't have taken the time to learn to cook, not like this. Like I bought some nice stainless steel pans. Like I did research on it. Like I've
I love
done,
this.
yeah, it really has like it's turned into my hobby that is almost like when I'm really stressed, I got a recipe, go to get the ingredients and I cook it.
You know what I love about cooking is it's so tangible.
Yes.
It's like your process creates this thing that you can then like consume. It like just is so part of a life. Consume, and there's so much culture around cooking. I mean, cooking is such a amazing art form.
And I didn't realize it till I was telling one of my friends who's a mental health advocate, about it, and he's a mindfulness teacher. He's like, you do realize that you're practicing mindfulness in this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I said, no, I'm not. He goes, no, it is, because you're kind of in like this Zen state, and you're focusing on what you're doing, and you're just processing that. He's like, that's mindfulness.
Yeah.
I said, okay, well, that's my mindfulness. That's my step into that world. And that's okay. I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah. And that's a great mindfulness. I mean, you got to eat, right? So it's really cool that you'll be able to eat, you know, it'll make you a ton healthier too, but you know, to be able to eat what you create is really cool.
Yes. And it's something that, you know, I don't know if, it's just something that I never would have thought I would enjoy as much as I do. I think that I would have thought I would do it, but it's gotten to the point where it's like I said, I am creating time to be able to cook. That's where it's awesome. Gotten to, which is, you know, that's not something that I would have done, you know, before my eldest son was born. So
it's really cool that you've discovered this about yourself, you know, that. And I think that's interesting. I always thought it's so weird that we're supposed to like know who we are and what we want to be and what we want our career to be and all of that. Like when we're teenagers,
yeah,
it's like, you don't know anything about yourself when you're a teenager, nothing. I would not have chosen my life. Like the things I love now. I mean, I think as a teenager, I would have thought I was a total nerd. You know, I'd be like,
you know? Oh, absolutely.
Especially since back then, if you were a techie or anything like that, you were very nerdy. Now it's like almost like the tech people are the rock stars. But, you know, I grew up in the grunge band era. So, you know, but
yeah,
it's so funny how we, you know, we discover all of these things about ourselves as we go through life, and we gather all of these experiences, and then these like new seeds bloom in us, you know?
It's so odd how kind of like we're taught, like you said, like this is who we should be and this is kind of where you should stay, instead of, you know, the growth that occurs. Because when you're a teenager, you can't even name the emotion you're feeling.
Right? Let alone like, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. Although you feel like you know what you want to do for the rest of your life when you're that age, you know,
kind of. Absolutely. Well, I mean, 5 years feels like an eternity back then. So, and now valid. It's like, you know, almost like what 5 months used to feel like is what 5 years is. It seems like the older you get, there's just no time.
That is so, I know, it's like the cruel joke of time. Like the less time you have, the faster it goes, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh man. Well, I hear that. I think that's great. Is there anything else that you have that has kind of come out of you or like since being sober that you feel like is a result of being sober?
Yeah. My patience levels increased a lot. The way that I'm able to identify things that I may not think are a problem, but somebody says something and I'm like, no, there's truth to that. I can improve that. And I can improve on that. And then really this past year has been a lot of like me being very top of mind about getting better about myself and understanding that feelings are not an enemy and you need to feel your feelings in order to really live life, because otherwise you're constantly trying to push them down. You're feeling shame because you're not feeling your emotions. And then you're just miserable and you don't know what to do.
Yeah. That's huge. Feel your feelings.
Yes. And like that has helped me see like how I am as a parent and how I want to, you know, break the generational curses that my kids have that I didn't even understand were passed down to me from, you know, even my grandparents. And that's something that I would not have had if I wasn't sober.
Right. Just makes you more aware.
Yeah. And when you really start to look at why I drink the way that I drink, when you start to look at, you know, and it's not excuses, but there's reasons around it. There's nothing happens in a vacuum. There's context in everything. And now I've been diagnosed, you know, with ADHD and learning how my brain works. Again, it's not an excuse. It's like, it's how my brain works. So looking back at as a kid and being like, oh, that's probably why, you know, I was all about sports and didn't focus on anything else. That's probably why I couldn't really see the future in front of me. And I had problems planning because it's just, it's more difficult for me to do. It's more difficult for me to bridge that gap in my mind. And the grace that I can give myself for not necessarily cleaning everything perfectly or not being completely organized and like having the organized chaos, you know?
Yeah.
But that's just my mind put out in the physical world. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just different.
I love that. Yeah. It seems like, you know, I think that that whole process, the whole process of us looking at it and saying, hey, I've come to a limit within myself, whatever it is, you know, where we thought we could do something or we thought that we were bigger than something or, but we just kind of run to the end of ourselves and having to admit that and say, oh, like I cannot do this or I have reached a point where I need help or things of that sort. It is a kind of beautiful moment. I do think it sets us up for better, like better things in the future when we can come to that, because so much pain is created from trying to hold on to that, like we'll call it an ego space, you know, trying to hold on to the projection of who we think we should look like or be. And then as soon as we release that, because we can't hold it, like it literally is like being ripped from our arms, you know, we can't hold on to it. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't have to be that. And it takes a lot of power away from others to hurt us as well, because it's, you know, they can say, like you said, when they say, oh, you know, you're screwing up, you could be like, am I? Yeah, I might be screwing up, because you don't have this kind of personal expectation of perfection or whatever. It doesn't feel so scary. So I do think that's a beautiful thing that reaching that point brings us, you know?
Absolutely. It's something that I never would have, I would have looked at like hearing this, I'd be like, they're just full of it. You know, they're just, they're going to extremes to prove a point. Like this isn't how it really is, but it is actually like that. It's not like a snap of the fingers and you're there. It's a process to get there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had this hole in my soul that I kept trying to fill. So it was, you know, alcohol, it was acceptance, it was, you know, relationships, it was work. And then I had a realization that I was about to shove my kids in there and I was going to put them in there. And then I was going to hold it against them that they're not the ones that cured it, you know? That's and that's huge. Like, not, I don't want that. Like I was holding, it was because I had such deep self-loathing.
Right.
That I didn't realize when I looked in the mirror, I thought I was a big POS. That was my neutral. Everything came back to that moment. And just getting to a point where I don't even look in the mirror and say, I love you. I look in the mirror and I say, you know what? You're okay. You're okay. We're getting better.
You know, it. One of the freest moments I had is, you know, I was always like so worried, like, about not being a great mom, right? Like, because I could just see everywhere I screwed up or anything. And you know those, I don't know if you've seen them, but they'll be like world's okayest mom or world's okayest dad. They're like mugs. And I saw that and I was like, I'm going to embrace that. I'm like just an okay mom. Because I was so stressed about being the perfect mom. And part of that is because of how I came into motherhood, right? So my first child was at 16. So I was like trying to prove myself as a mother, you know, like I can still be a good mom. And so then when I said, I'm like the world's okayest mom, like as soon as I embraced that kind of humility about it, I just released so much, you know, and I have to hand it to my mother, because my mother, whenever we were teenagers and we would be like, you've ruined my life. You're horrible. You know, all the things that teenagers say. She would just be like, she'd be like, oh, honey, go tell it to your therapist. You know, like you got issues for days, like go tell it to. And I remember I was never able to do that with my kids. I was always so worried about being the perfect. My mom was so just kind of, I guess, sure of herself and was like, whatever, hate me then. But, Yeah. So I think that that humility point of just saying, you know, I don't have to be the best, you know, I don't have to be, you don't have to be like you super sexy beast in the mirror. You know, you can be like, hey, you're okay. You're doing okay. You're still here. You're trudging on. You got this.
Absolutely. Because you're not always going to be perfect. You're not always going to love yourself. But if you could just say, you know what, you're okay. We're going to take the steps forward. And, you know, just like that sobriety saying, one day at a time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's one moment at a time. You'll get through it. It's not always going to be easy. There are some really hard times, mm-hmm. but you can do this. And that is, it's like that fear that we have that really, it holds on to us. And I think that's what really drives a lot of times when we don't want to learn something new. It's the fear of what's going to happen if you learn it.
Right.
And, you know, we fear what we don't know. Mm-hmm. So if you try to drill in, okay, why am I fearing this? What is it that I don't know? And then you can learn a little bit about it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's not so bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
See that? That's not, I can do this. I can do this.
For sure. And that a lot of times that fear of learning new things comes from, if we don't have a good sense of self, right? Any kind of new idea threatens sense of self because it might mean we have to look at ourselves and see ourselves in a different way. So when we can say, the more that you do that and the more that you establish a strong sense of self and you kind of know how you feel in different situations and things like that, and you stop fearing it as much, then life starts to kind of shift into this other mode where it's like an adventure and like you can't get enough of new ideas and you can't get enough of new things. And it's a really cool shift that happens. And it makes life so much better to have that mentality. I just want to say, although, you know, it doesn't mean that you're not going to still go through it.
Right. I mean, how do you know you've tasted your favorite food? How do you know you've done your favorite hobby?
Right.
How do you know that you've gone to your favorite vacation place?
Right. Yeah. Or that you're going to like cooking, you know, or whatever it is. I know.
Absolutely. So this is real too. This tells you about like the growth of us as humans from like a physical level. I've always hated raw tomatoes and raw onions. Mm-hmm. About 4 months ago, about 6 years ago, I started to realize, no, I actually like raw tomatoes now. They just can't be like the super quick grown ones that have no flavor. Those are the ones I don't really like. And then about 5-6 months ago, I started liking raw onions. I don't know why. I can have raw onions on a sandwich or in a salad, and I think it's delicious.
Yeah, it's because you're developing your palate.
I used to try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to try it, and I would not like raw onions. I could always taste them. If they were cooked, I loved them. But if it was raw, I couldn't do it. And now it's like, oh, this is different.
Because you're becoming a chef and you're like palate's getting sophisticated.
Wow. Absolutely.
Yes, I love that. I know we shift and we change. We're not stagnant beings. We are, you know, a living, growing organism. And on that note, it's like it's never too late to make a change too. We don't have to be stuck to our past story. We can evolve, we can change, we can grow, we can heal completely and entirely from our past stuff and create an entirely new life for ourselves. So I think that that's a beautiful thing to get out of this.
Yeah, that that really does sum up our conversation today really well.
So, there we go. That was my podcaster moment there.
Getting pretty good at this.
I'm getting better. This has been a wild ride. Another growth change, you know, learning how to podcast.
It turns out it's fun because you get to meet people you never would have met otherwise.
Right. And you just get it. This has been so cool. I'm like, we can just have conversations with people and make it into something, you know, because I just want to talk to people about everything all the time anyway. So being able to podcast and have other people listen to it. And then I love listening to other people have conversations on their podcasts. And it's just kind of a cool thing we've developed.
It really is. It's one of my favorite mediums, right? It is probably my favorite medium to digest right now. Like, I don't listen to music very much anymore. It's just podcasts.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That social thing. Well, if you were going to promote something for, that you're doing right now, what is it? What do you want everybody to know about?
Go to untappedkeg.com and just check out the podcast. We've had some really awesome conversations, especially the past, 8 months. I would say this entire year, we've had really awesome guests on, like yourself. I'm pretty sure you were episode 121, which I think was two episodes ago. So go check that one out. And we have some more really awesome conversations where it's not just, it's kind of like this, where it's not just about the story, but it's about the growth and the different perspectives that come into, sobriety, and then also mental health, because those paths are so parallel that you can't talk about one without the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Well, everyone check out his podcast. I am going to put the link to it in the show notes so you guys can check it out there. We're going to have this on YouTube and on the podcast. So we hope you enjoy. And again, we believe you can do this. Just take it one moment, 1 hour, one day at a time, and you can change your life into something that was better or different than before. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.